You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Fly on the Call. That's the first time I'm saying it in a long time, and it feels so good. It started to kind of disappear for a while, you know. It's just a little bit of a funk, but I'm very glad to be back and, you know, doing my best to stay consistent with the podcast going forward. Today's guest is Posture and the Grizzly, who are on tour right now. If you're listening to this the day it drops, they're playing tonight, June 2nd, in Richmond, Virginia, tomorrow in Roanoke, Virginia, on the 4th in Washington, D.C., and the 5th wrapping it up in Philly. Today we're talking all about their self-titled album, which is, in my opinion, their best work to date. To my ears, it's a perfect mix between their first Bush Hymns, which is a really, you know, kind of raw punk energy, and their second album, I Am Satan, which, you know, brought a lot of comparisons to Blink-182's untitled album. We're talking about how the band, you know, by many of their fans' standards, are a highly underrated band, you know, kind of flying under the radar, but with a really passionate fan base. We're also talking about, you know, really taking the time they need to make things happen organically, both in regards to the fan base and in regards to the music themselves, you know, kind of a slow and steady process. They're really kind of buckling down and taking things seriously. You know, they're dedicated to the long haul, and they're writing music that they want to hear. So without further ado, let's just hop right into the interview. Here I am talking with Posture and the Grizzly. I feel like Posture and the Grizzly has kind of always been, you know, sort of out of the press cycle type of thing. I'm curious kind of like how that, you know, not quite anonymity, but like secrecy kind of like affects the band.
I mean, it definitely sucks, I would say. I mean, it's not something we chose to do, but it's something that just kind of happens without our, you know, we can't do anything about it, I guess.
Right. Well, I guess it makes things a little bit complicated sometimes in terms of like, I mean, especially making a plan, you know, since we got together and started, you know, making the self-titled, with like the hiatus of the band, just kind of like the natural lull of things with the label falling apart and whatnot. It's like,
right. And even back then, like, we didn't really have any kind of PR or anything. We just kind of did our own thing, just released and
right,
so let it grow
exactly
into what it is now. So,
which is kind of cool to like have, you know. I think the thing I see by far the most about the band is the most criminally underrated band ever. Like, I think I've probably read it like 1,000 times, which is a cool sentiment. You know, it was just PR would be nice, and we've kind of been, you know, paying our dues again. Kind of coming back out here, hitting the ground running, just like hitting up old contacts and trying to get back out there for like, you know, hey, we're here and we're doing this for real. So any help would be appreciated.
And it's just hard too, because like we never were a huge band anyway. So right. We're not, you know, you don't expect anything. So any kind of like give and take is cool with me. So
yeah, I definitely feel like all the love I've seen for Posture and the Grizzly seems to be like very organic, for better or for worse.
Right, and that's awesome. Like, you can't complain, you know. Any kind of attention is good attention, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, in one of like the few interviews that I was able to kind of pull up was with the Japanese site Punk Save the Earth. You kind of mentioned like you're dealing with a lot of writer's block after I Am Satan. But like looking forward to that slow creative process of what ended up being the self-titled, and I feel like that's kind of interesting, because usually people find Rise Box to be really like frustrating rather than invigorating. So like, could you talk a little bit about kind of like that process?
Yeah. So after I'm Saying, you know, there was no band. It was just me. I didn't necessarily have the means to record a record financially, or I didn't have equipment to do so. And I didn't have anyone else there with me to like build off songs. You know, usually when you're with your band, you shoot ideas back and forth and kind of make something organic. But it was just me, just demoing for a while until I met Ryan. That was 2019. So, I mean, yeah, it was like 3 years of just me kind of sitting on demos I had from over time. And a lot of the songs on the record were songs I demoed from prior years, you know, between 2016 and 2019. So, yeah, I don't know. It just came together nicely, I think.
Despite some more like logistical hiccups and whatnot, I think the process for me was a lot of fun once we finally like really hit the ground running. I think we hit like a stride of we finally found this very consistent vision, you know, and because like something definitely I noticed you had developed, you know, when you were kind of on your own, you did like the Kyrie stuff, which we ended up reprising a couple of those songs too on the record. You were moving towards kind of a little more experimental path, and I think like we hit this like very unspoken culmination of that direction you were going towards, but also everything you had done in the past.
Right.
You know, and I think that's kind of like it bolsters the whole kind of like self-titled thing in that way. And also the fact that it almost feels like LP1. I mean, it obviously does for me,
mm-hmm.
but it's just like in terms of us moving forward, I think that's got to be the perception too with audience, you know, because I mean, it's been like 5 years. I mean, we finally have a tour that I think is going to happen this time.
As long as everyone stays safe, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, after canceling us too. So, you know, things feel fresh, things feel exciting. And I don't know, that process was cool for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the most time I ever spent on a record. You know, I don't have that many under my belt, but like the other two were just so quick. Like Push It, we were in there 3 days, done. Satan, 5 days, done. I mean, this one was literally almost 2 years.
2 years.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I mean, can you talk a little bit more about kind of like the timeline of that? Because I'm always curious, you know, especially with that gap, like how was the kind of like, how did the writing and the recording process kind of like separate and, you know, culminate, you know, to the final record that it became?
I'll let you take that one.
Yeah.
Because we got together through a mutual friend who was in the band
for
a little while. And we were just sitting on demos. Like I said, we did like an acoustic album that we never finished. That's supposed to be a Posture thing.
That's the thing. We were kind of just like vibing each other out when we first, you know, decided to, you know, we knew of each other probably. I mean, we've been in the same place at the same time.
Right. We're both in Connecticut. So Connecticut's very small.
Yeah. And like we hung out with all the same people playing in bands. I used to play in Guest House. I don't know if that is a name that rings any bells, but like
I played with Guest House.
Right. So,
we played together before. You know?
Exactly. And then going forward from there, just kind of like meeting up and like vibing each other out, doing that acoustic thing, which I actually listened to the other day. It's pretty cool. Yeah. You know, and over time, like just getting, we got to know each other better and just, you know, for better or for worse, became, you know, close, very, very close friends. And I think that made the process, because there was a trust built, and especially with you having done this on your own the whole time, like
right, so you don't relinquish anything, you know.
I imagine, like, I mean, I'm not saying imagine it was tough for you, which, like, you know, when you started kind of letting me help nurture your baby, like that was sick for me, and I think it was really, really interesting to watch how the sound developed when, like, I think we clicked. Like, obviously, like, you're the freight train with the ideas, and you never forget a riff when you come up with it on the spot, which is beyond me.
But that's just something you kind of have to do being a songwriter over time, because, like, you only can write, you know, a certain way for so long before, in your mind, it becomes stale or stagnant. Maybe to other people it's great, but in me, like, I'm so indecisive, and I'm just like, you know, I'll listen to something, and I'll be like, this just fucking sucks. Like, I just can't deal with that anymore.
You're indecisive, dude?
I am, if you haven't noticed.
I didn't know.
So, yeah, so 2019, the fall, that's when we met, and there's a lot of, like, demoing going on. I mean, we had, like,
so much.
20 songs of just random stuff that we didn't end up using. A lot of pre-production. Then we finally got the drums done, and there was another break of a couple months until Ryan hit me up again, like, hey, you want to finish this? And this was in June of last year, so we kind of just dove in for a few months and got it done.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, probably should be said, like, through the process, like, that, you know, the last few years for all of us have been definitely, and this is kind of outside of, you know, the pandemic, which has absolutely rocked everybody, but, like, mm-hmm. personally, like, we've gone through some of the toughest shit, like, and, you know, it's kind of just, like, working around that and being there for each other, and, you know, I feel like every time we, you know, we made a little progress with the record, like, something would try to kick us back down. You know, as cliche as it sounds, it was just, like, it was a crazy uphill battle getting it done. It was just, and every time we finished, like, another piece of it, it was just that much more gratifying. And I think, like, we, you know, we hit a point where it was, like, what else could possibly happen? And nothing is going to be able to stop this at this point, so... You know, we're in it for the long haul and trying to take things very seriously now in terms of touring and getting back out there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, can you talk a little bit more about kind of like the tour that's finally coming together with a perspective on the handhold?
I'll let you take this one. Yeah, I'll chime in when I can. What is there to say? I mean,
well, I mean, there's a lot to
there's
say.
There's a lot to say. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot. I know you know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, we've canceled two tours. Obviously due to the pandemic, and that one was kind of like we had the first tour, Posture's first tour back, like, after I don't know how many years of that.
2017, I think, is the last time with Prince Daddy.
Yeah, and you know, it was a pretty long one too. I think like yeah. a month or so.
It was like two something weeks.
Yeah, well, who knows?
Same shit, right?
So much time has gone by, but I think we put the single out that we did together, yep. Fixing What Passed,
yep.
at the time. So we were looking forward to, like, finally get out there. And then, you know, little did we know we wouldn't be able to try again for another almost 2 years. So that was just kind of a blow, like, finding the motivation to keep working towards this thing with this ethereal band that no one really knows where they exist. Like, when we weren't able to tour, when we already hadn't been touring, and then now making this record that we had been promising for so long. So, and then we finally, you know, get to have the means to book another tour, and everything seems good and clear, and all our friends are out touring. Prince Daddy's out.
Until literally, know, like, 2 days
before. Same Face is out. And then I see, the thing that hit for me, like, okay, we're canceling the second tour, was, like, you know, Save Face again, like, had to cancel dates. And I was talking to them about it, and then I got up for work, I remember, the day we canceled that second tour, and I drive by the, like, the clinic, urgent care, every day before work, and there was a line down the street and around the corner.
Damn. Oh, damn.
And I immediately called our, like, booking agent, Brandon, and I was like, this tour's not happening, is it? He's like, no. He's like, I'm glad you called me first, you know, I'd have to do that, so...
Which sucks because, you know, right. it's out of our control. Right. There's never anything that we could do
exactly.
about it.
We're not going to put anyone at risk. We're not going to put ourselves at risk. So, you know, we waited patiently again. And now here we are at the present. And I think we might be in the clear. So it's a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, there's a weird mysticism around it. Like, it still doesn't feel real. And I think the guys in Perspective are probably on the same page. Mm-hmm. Considering I think they exist in a very similar realm as we do in terms
right.
of...
Because they've been dormant, too, right? For
yeah, since Lousy came out.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah, although they do have a new record coming out, which they announced, so I can say that. And I've gotten to hear it, and it is something. It is incredible.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, it's going to be two and a half weeks, something like that, 2 weeks.
I can't even keep track of time anymore.
I think it's like two
and a half. I know we're going places, and it's going to be a hell of a time, so.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's been a long time, so.
Yeah, I'm from Connecticut as well, and.
Oh, no shit. Where are you from?
I'm from Middletown. So I caught the Safe Face Origami Angel Spanish Love Songs and Wonder Years tour the other week, and that was like my first kind of show back, and it was like, it felt so good to be back, and it also felt like relatively comfortable, which I was very happy about.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's the thing, is like, it almost felt new again, like it, you know, revitalized, like wanting to be at shows. Obviously the effect is very clear that it had on everyone, kind of, you don't know what you got till it's gone. I mean, even for myself, like, I've been playing bands around the state since I was a kid, and you hit a point where, you know, I found that I, you know, something I had done for so long, just going to shows on the weekends, regardless of who was playing. And I realized, like, at a certain point, I haven't gone to a show that I wasn't performing at in years. You know, I wasn't supporting the community in the way that I want them to support me. And then, you know, I went to a show Sunday night with Aunts and Snowpiler and Cinema Stare, my brother's band. And it was a Sunday night, and I had a killer time just being around peers and like talking about music. I'm like, I have been robbing myself of this, like even before the pandemic, like just not going to shows, you know. It's something we all love, and it's something that's built into us. So,
well, it's hard too when you get older, right? I mean, you're working, yeah, exactly. You've got a family, and,
right?
You know, I guess you can make excuses for anything, but
right.
Defending you, you know, you, it's hard. It's hard to find time, and
it's tough, but it's worth it. So
it is
for sure. Yeah, I mean, there was like, you know, a pretty big jump in sound between Bush Hymns and I Am Satan. And I feel like, you know, the self-titled album is really like kind of like this happy medium for me. And I was curious if you could just kind of talk a little bit about kind of like bridging the gap between those two albums.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, it's two different kind of styles, but like I kind of took things I liked from both of those records and try to, like you said, make it a happy medium for me and everyone else, you know, take the good parts of what everyone likes about those records and use it to our advantage. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you also have you kind of just are a hook machine. Like, you can just, if I put a guitar in Jay's hands, like, there's going to be like he's just going to start singing a hook. And like,
that's just my thing. Like, I've always just been about, what do I want to hear?
Yeah.
You know? Cause I've always just wrote the music for me, no one else, you know,
right.
It's never been anything to make money off of or, you know, to get big or anything. It's just kind of like, what do I want to listen to when, you know, I'm in my backyard drinking some beers or something.
Yeah. I mean, your mood, and I can tell you this from someone who like writes songs with you, is your mood definitely, like, whatever you start playing and how it sounds, I can tell, like, kind of where your head's at in a moment. Because you can't really explain, like, why you said what you said or why you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
And then, like, I'll find out later, you know, what, you know, you were doing earlier in the day or whatever. And I'm
just
like,
have to show you.
Exactly. Like, yeah, you
do it for you so you can understand.
Right. It's kind of like, I mean, definitely for you, just really one of the only ways you can express yourself in a way that makes sense.
Right.
And that's super cool. And so, like, in terms of bridging that gap between those records and then making the third record, I think there was, we didn't think about it as much as it probably seems like.
We didn't go out of our way and be like, oh, this has to be, you know, better than I Am Satan, or this has to be as, like,
I went into
raw
like
as
that,
Bush Hymns, you know? There was no, like, thought process. It's just like, let's just do it. Let's just do what sounds the best for the songs and go from there.
Something we always like kind of harp on is, if you're like forcing an idea to work, it's not going to work. And like, all the songs we used are songs that the like main idea was fleshed out in like 15 minutes.
Right.
Even the ones that like you didn't already have like demos or whatever.
Right. The skeletons were there.
Right. And like, you know, when you mesh and it just happens naturally, like those are the songs you're rocking with. But when you're sitting there, like, and we got there's a couple songs we cut off the record. And there's aspects of them that, you know, we love, and maybe we'll even, you know, release those songs, but it wasn't as natural coming out.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, like talking about like bridging the gap, like the X interludes, you know, especially kind of recall the earlier Posture material, you know, especially on XX, which, you know, does so specifically lyrically. And I feel like, you know, I listened to them all in a row today, and they kind of also, you know, really fit together as a singular piece as well. Can you talk a little about kind of like how those interludes came together and how they kind of like, you know, relate to the flow of the album?
Yeah, so I always personally wanted like little interludes on a record for the, you know, longest time, because I've always been a fan of like Appleseed Cast, especially Low Level Owl. Like, they have a lot of like ambient, just like post-rocky kind of stuff. I kind of wanted to mimic that just to like bridge the songs and make it more cohesive. I guess that's kind of what my thought process of doing the interludes was, just making it more like a story. Just kind of like how the other two were, you know, it's the third chapter of this story, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
because there's just a lot of things I wanted to say on Satan, but, you know, I was just too restricted with time and budget.
And I think those things ended up coming out, but also after years of reflecting on them.
Right.
You know, and
that's what we like to call this record. It was like the reflection one, you know.
I mean, writing it, there was obviously a lot of that, because so much time had gone by, so much had happened, you know, crazy opportunities, missed opportunities, like, right. You know, how do you handle it all? But, you know, in terms of those interludes themselves, like, kind of the way, like, I approached it, you know, I don't even think it's really something we explicitly talked about, but, like, you know, my thought process when we were, you know, coming up with the, like, that official, like, track listing was, you know, the interludes, because we didn't make those interludes until after we had a track listing. And those interludes kind of, because the album kind of ebbs and flows in terms of, like, you know, the feel and the vibe. I mean, the first three songs, you know, Creepshow, Unfortunate Friends, and Black Knight, those are just, they're punk songs. It's just rock, like. And then you hit the interlude, and that's a mood shift. And then it goes into Kyrie, which is a little, it's definitely, like, a different realm. It's more of a it's a concept song, obviously, but...
Right.
You know, it's not as cut and dry as the first three. And then, you know, it kind of marks every shift in mood, I think. That's the way I was envisioning it and the way, you know, I was pushing for it to sound when we were, you know, squeezing those into where we wanted them to be.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me that you did that, like, you know, after you had the track listing done.
Yeah, because... there's certainly, like, a lot going on the record, but for us, like, everything felt so cohesive, and we wanted that to translate, you know? Yeah, but, and then we, you know, we threw five-band gig down there, and, like...
That's just
But fun, I think it breaks, you know? It up nicely.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
'Cause, and, I mean, the things that are said in that song are very realistic feelings after all these years of...
Well, especially if you've been there. Playing, you know, music for... 15 years, yeah. Right? I mean, come on, everyone. No one likes a 5-band gig.
I mean, how many times do you go on Twitter? You know, Caleb literally just tweeted today, like, if any bill more than 4 bands is just, you know, I digress.
No, I feel that for sure. I mean, like, obviously, you know, especially around the release of I Am Satan, the Blink-182 comparison was something that was especially prominent, you know, to the point that you're mentioned in The New Yorker because of it. I'm curious at kind of like how you feel about that and kind of how that influenced the self-titled record.
I mean, it didn't really influence the self-titled record because, like, obviously I grew up on Blink. I'm a big Blink head. Everyone who knows me knows that. So, like, I always kind of...
Well, even The New Yorker knew that because you were just the resident expert, like, on Pawn Stars. Like, let me call in my buddy who's the expert on Blink.
The New Yorker wrote that because we played a show in Brooklyn, and he happened to be there. And the band... I was touring with Prince Daddy at the time. They were my backing band, and we did a Blink-182 cover. Because I think it was... that show was, like, a prom night or something. So we did Please Take Me Home. And, you know, obviously we killed it. so he wrote about it. I don't know, but I guess that was kind of just like a lucky a thing. But no, it's whatever. Everyone has their the people they inspire by, and you know,
I've accepted we'll never shake the Blink thing, and that's okay. Because
that's okay.
We don't. No one ever talks about like we got to make this sound like this Blink song.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I mean, those are heroes. Obviously, they. They treaded the original path, so if we happen to be following behind it, that's something I'm okay with.
Yeah, 100%. They influenced so many bands, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Especially sure. Everything 2003 and prior, in my opinion, you know, paved the way for so many bands.
Yeah, I feel like there are, like, I can't think specifically of which ones there are on this album, but I feel like there were, like, a couple bass lines. I was like, oh, yeah, this feels very Blink, you know, yeah, in addition to,
very poppy,
you know, the
very,
vocals.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
Was that, like, Sailboats, that bass line?
Well, that, and that song was...
Which is crazy.
...is old, you know. That song I wrote when I was 16 years old. I'll be 30 this summer. So it's just crazy having that song on the album, too, because...
That's like my favorite song on the record. I can't. Same. That's the thing. The original idea you wrote at 16 years old, which is, I'm glad I got to be a part of that. You know.
Yeah. How did that end up, you know, making it on the record at this point?
I always wanted to put that song on one of the records, and it just never came to fruition until this one.
And what was it about it that kind of like made it? You know.
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you. I don't know why.
We had time.
Yeah, that's probably why. We had a few years to really dig deep and think about what we wanted to do. And I thought it was always a good song. I thought it was always catchy, so.
I think we were able to do it the justice it deserved, you know?
Yeah.
I hope your vision was executed.
Well, and we changed it up, too. Like, it's not exactly the same song.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, and then another one that kind of, like, really stood out to me is Create Me. You know, not just the Taking Back Sunday reference with the I Don't Think We'll Ever Come Back Down, but the, you know, there's no passion, just synergy. There's no passion, just bad energy. Like, can you talk a little about how that one came together?
Yeah. So the Taking Back Sunday reference was by accident, actually.
I don't know if it was subconscious or what, but...
Yeah, that was an accident. But we paid our dues, man. Take Back Sunday's sick, right?
Yeah,
I'm not going to... Yeah, I stole it, all right? If that's what you want to hear, I stole it.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, before we move on, because that's something we literally didn't even think about. You know, we weren't cognizant of it at all. I forgot.
Well, no one said anything until after the record came out. I got a few messages, you know.
We got an email from Ian Cohen asking to hear the record. So naturally we sent it, and he replies like this, you know, blah, 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 it's great, whatever. You know, is that a Taking Back Sunday reference? And that was the first time we were like, wait a minute. Because he, you know, he put the song like 180 by 7, so we listened to it, and then we were like, dude.
It's like, we have to go with it now.
Yeah.
Like, we have to.
So yeah, we love Taking Back Sunday. That's why we referenced that on the record.
I was telling people I wrote the original song. And people believe me. Just like that picture with Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I was like, yeah, I was in the show. I had like five people message me.
You had a lot of people.
You were in
going,
Sabrina the Teenage Witch? I was like, yeah. I was a little guy.
But anyways, Create Me.
Yeah, Create Me. So yeah, it's a song we just jammed as a full band downstairs. And we wanted to reprise Delete Me because I really like that song. So we kind of built around that in the way. I mean, the lyrics to the chorus part that you're talking about just kind of came naturally. You know, we were just jamming downstairs. I kind of just yelled what was on my mind. So wasn't, you know, real thought process behind those other than... Whatever came out naturally, you know?
You know, that's the thing is what I do is I try to listen very intently to, you know, picking up what it is he's trying to convey without being able to use his words until he's singing them. And then once I, you know, we realize like the concept, then it's like, I feel like it's so much easier to flow through it. And then Create Me just kind of fell out of you. Like when, you know, after, you know, you kind of just, cause a lot of times when we practice or we're writing, like, he'll just, you know, you'll just kind of shout and mumble melodies or kind of saying nonsense,
yep.
You know, but like there's sentence or like fragments that build up a whole of like, there's an idea there,
right,
of what you're trying to say, you know, and then we flesh out like exactly how to phrase it properly.
And even when we do jam down there, sometimes I'll just have my cell phone or whatever and I'll listen back on the car ride home and I'm like, oh, that word there, or like that phrase would sound cooler if I said this word instead, and I'll just... You know, I'll go on my notes on my phone and write it, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then after, when, you know, when it comes time to record, kind of the same thing happens again.
Right.
Because you hear it back, and then you're like, oh, wow, maybe if I said it actually this way instead, you know, it'll kind of round out this whole point that...
Which I don't think is too odd, because I feel like a lot of bands kind
of
do
well, of
that
course.
Similar
I mean,
thing, you know.
I would hope you kind of edit your lyrics after, like, the, you know.
Right. Not just saying, like, garbage, garbage, garbage.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I've been in bands like that before anyways, but... I don't know. That song is, like... there's so much going on in it. Like, it just it rises and falls.
A lot of layers.
And, yeah, and honestly, the end of that song is, like, just, like, I love the, like, the shreddy thing.
Same,
just the ridiculous
riff,
drum solo at the end. Like, it's just, it feels so epic, and, like, it was so, it's very, like, honest.
And then even at, like, the end, like, the summer night line sounded
really cool. Right. Yeah, but, I mean, that's the thing. That one just felt very, very genuine, like, from the heart, kind of.
Yeah, that's sort of like editing, self-editing of lyrics. I was listening to, you know, the whole discography today, and from, you know, Calling All Creeps to Bush Hymns, there was like the slight change in lyric from like, you went to the bar and fucked up again to like, you got fucked up at the bar again. I was like,
that
was one that really stood out to me. I was like, okay, like, you know, I like that it's, you know, kind of like a continual process.
And even like live, I'll change up a couple lyric things here and there that, you know, I always thought would sound better, but it's obviously too late to change. So
yeah, I mean, this, like Acid Bomb, the end of Acid Bomb, maybe once you have sang the lyrics that are as it's like written.
Yeah,
like,
I don't sing it how it's written.
No,
I
never
say something completely different.
And I like, that's the thing, is like I like what you do with it. It's just always, it's interesting to hear it a different way. Like, cause to me, I don't really like go and like listen to that song on my own that often. So like in my mind, like those are the words. So like when I do hear it, it's like,
what the fuck is he doing?
It me up a little bit. Yeah.
What is he saying?
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I have to mention the Intuit Over feature on Unfortunate Friends, because I feel like that, you know, really fits so perfectly in the song. And I'd love to hear kind of like a little bit how that song and that, you know, feature came together.
That was just a great opportunity. I can't say anything, but it just was so sick to have Evan on that song. Because, like, growing up, he was like a rock star to me, you know? So, like,
I'm sorry if, you know, I'm gonna take my moment here. So, I mean, first of all, I mean, Evan is absolutely fantastic. Just, like, awesome dude. Like, he really, really did not, like, skimp.
No. And he didn't have to do anything.
He didn't have to do, like, this for us at all. And just, like, having him involved. And, like, you know, kind of to answer your question, like, why that was the song to go to him was just, it's like thematically, like he always kind of wrote about the same thing of just like, you know, painstakingly get like kind of rolling through life as you get older. And that's where we're at with that song. And it was just like this is, he's got to be on this song.
I can't even remember like having that conversation with you being like, you know, we should get on this song is.
We were sitting, you were in that chair and I was in this chair and we were just like this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's just like this.
Yeah. You know, so, and then of course, like, clear, I'd like to think he resonated with it because he sent it back and it was just like, I was like blown away by how well it fit and sits like in the song. And also just to hear his voice on like in my studio, like on a song made, like, and I, you know, I, on our Twitter, you know, I don't know if it's something you saw. I, you know, I tweeted at him because the first show I ever went to, my older brother took me to see Intuit Over Acoustic, at Paris in Plantsville, Connecticut. And it was like, it was Transit Acoustic. I can't remember, a Paper Tugboat, I think, and Intuit Over It. And I, you know, I watched Evan play, just him in a guitar, and I, you know, I was blown away. Like, my mind at that moment was exposed to a whole new world of music. And I literally went out home that night. My friend Ben, my brother, brought him with us too. We went home, and I very rudimentally knew how to play the guitar. And we just started trying to write songs after that experience. And, like, here we are now. And, like, to be able to do that with him, like, you know, someone who's such an influence on me and you, and I don't even have words. It just, it's so full circle, like, and it feels awesome. It was, I'm very happy it happened.
Same.
For sure. Yeah, and like I said, it feels very, like, it feels so seamless. Like, it feels like the perfect
it was
of,
supposed
like,
to
match
be there,
between the songs.
Know?
Right.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, Posture's artwork, you know, album artwork has always been something that, like, really stands out and, you know, kind of makes an impression on me. So I'd love to hear about a little bit how the self-titled artwork came together and, you know, the ideas behind it.
You want to take this one?
Jane Asti, it's posture, you know, but...
I mean, well, this one I hit up Jordan Hudkins, who did, he's from Roswell Kid. He did the first, three releases. So I kind of wanted to go back to something more of that style, but, I don't think they are doing art anymore from what I gathered. So we hit up Ryan's friend, Zach, who's a great talented artist, and he drew up like, 5 to 10 different kind of ideas?
He set up, because we were trying to, you know, in typical posture fashion, we were very crunched for time as well. I hit up Zach, who's obviously very, like, quick. He can, like, throw ideas.
Yeah, you know, all like hand-drawn, colored.
Yeah, so, you know, we were like, this is kind of the vibe we're going for. He looked at the other artwork, and stuff, but I was like, I very much want it to be your own. I want you to, like, you know, I did the thing, I was like, listen to the record and, like, I want to see what it invokes from you, and, like, that's kind of like what we wanted to go with. And then
there's a few other runner-ups we had too.
Yeah, absolutely. But when the draft came through for that one, it's just like the similarity it draws from, like, the Bush Hymns cover, while, like, it almost seems like in I Am Satan, like the girl with the umbrella, like it almost feels like the girl in the picture is her. Like,
right.
Like, and like, it's just all kind of like, it's like, this has to be it kind of thing, you know?
I immediately liked that one. I mean, that was always my go-to.
I remember fighting with you a little bit about it.
Yeah, because you're going to go with something else, but like, I just can't see it. Like, I just can't see it.
Yeah, when you
online or anything.
When you say the, you need to trust me and... No, like, this is the thing I'm resonating with. Like, that's just what we gotta rock with, because I feel like, you know, I gotta trust your vision when I do. It always is just like, I'm glad I did that.
And even, like, the little details, like the scratchiness on the cover, too. Like, how it's kind of, like, it looks dated, or, like an almost like an old picture.
It's such a subtle thing,
like that,
too.
Yeah. It's, like, the little things, you know?
For sure. Yeah, and I feel like there's always, like, that little bit of, like, kind of off-white on all of your album covers, and it's like it kind of, you know, makes it feel cohesive in a way too. And then, you know, I always like to wrap up the same way, which is just by kind of like asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about lately, whether it's music or life or whatever, that you kind of would just like to share.
Just don't give up, just do whatever you feel is right, listen to your instincts, and don't let anyone else tell you otherwise. You know, just do your thing and put all you have into it, and just let it go. Just whatever happens, you know, there's no risk untaken when you just try your best. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. I mean, and again, like something very clearly this band has had its, you know, many different cycles of its life. And the point we're at now after all these years is, okay, we're finally, I think, ready and in a position to be the band that, you know, you set out to be. So that, like, that being said, you know, kind of the same thing. Express your vision the best you can. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing. Do you. And, like to me, like, hearing something genuine shows in songs. And let that reflect in, like, the way you know, carry yourself at shows or the things you do, and, you know, hopefully opportunity comes for everyone who's searching for it, you know?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, is there anything that we haven't had on about the album or the upcoming tour that you have been really wanting to get out there?
I guess if there's really anything, the idea for us just going forward is that I'm going to steal, like, the Hot Mulligan bit. Like, we're the number one hot new band.
The real one.
Yeah, we're the real one. I think, you know, I don't know how many, like, stories there are where it's, like, you know, people found, like, some sort of, like, success, like, living this life, you know, after kind of the life cycle this band has taken. But, you know, we're so excited, and we've been writing so much material, and just, like, we're, like, just trying to take it as far as we can take it. And, you know,
I'm not going to stop doing it until I'm dead. So
right.
Posture the will be forever. It's right. Never going anywhere.
That's the thing. Is it, like, any period of time where we stop making music, we're just not physically capable of doing it. It's going to happen no matter what. So we may as well just go as far in as we possibly can. So just keep, I guess my thing I want to get off my chest is, you know, be prepared. We're going to be in your face and all over the place. You know, and I hope you like what you hear and see.
And there you have it, Posture and the Grizzly. If you have the chance, catch them on tour between now and June 5th. And definitely check out their self-titled album. Like I said in the intro, it's my favorite to date, and I highly recommend their entire discography. And next week, I will be back. I'm dedicated to that. I'm talking to another band that's on tour right now, Cliff Diver. You should definitely make sure to catch that if you can. I'm really stoked to catch them next week in Connecticut. They just dropped their debut full-length, Exercise Your Demons, on Side One Dummy. So definitely check that out and prepare yourself for this episode, because one of my favorites, as always, love Cliff Diver. Go ahead and listen to their past episode that I had them on, because that was one of the really early like ones that, you know, really hit home for me. So yeah, Posture and the Grizzly, Cliff Diver, check them both out. Love them. Be a fan. Flying the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media in partnership with Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping promote the show, Jiraiya for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at Flying the Call Pod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at flyingthecallpod@gmail.com. Feels good to be back, and catch you next week.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.